You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, hey, got a subject we're going to talk about with a guest near and dear to my heart, asset protection. You know, the world is full of people that just want to take your hard-earned cash. They want to sell off your assets, liquidate you, and take all your money and run. And the key to it all is to have an asset protection plan in place before you need one. Because once you need one, it's too late. And if you had somebody who is as much of a bloodhound as myself, then you weren't gonna have a good outcome. You were gonna pay. And every day you read stories in the newspapers of people being ruined by lawsuits. I remember talking to somebody who had a charter jet company, and a famous golfer died in one of their crashes, and they were wiped out, literally billions of dollars. Well, we've got Douglas Ludmell here with us, attorney and asset protection specialist, to help educate you and teach you the right ways to prepare. Because in this day and age, anybody can start a lawsuit at any time, no matter how frivolous, or finished if you're not there. Just the legal fees alone can ruin you. Doug, welcome to the show. Hey, if you got a question for Doug, shoot me an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Doug, welcome. And hey, asset protection, it's kind of one of those things. It doesn't mean anything until you actually need it, kind of like homeowner's insurance. Uh-huh. Like, just because nobody's made a claim, you never made a claim, you never had a hurricane hit, doesn't mean you go and cancel your homeowner's insurance, right?
Right. Yeah, asset protection is a thing that I unfortunately get a lot of calls from people who need it after the fact, and it's a different story, as you said, than if you have it planned ahead of time. So, and you know, you were on the other side of this, you know how it works. And if you've got a strong wall built, you're going to get a better outcome. It doesn't mean you get out of everything. You still got to take responsibility for what you do in your life and the obligations that you have, but it definitely levels the playing field, which right now is pretty imbalanced if you have nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's two kinds of people in this world, right? People that have assets and people that don't. If you're judgment proof, why bother buying car insurance?
Right.
Why bother buying liability insurance? You don't have to worry about it because nobody can get anything out of you anyway, right?
Right. Well, that's the ultimate asset protection. You just don't have any assets. And that's most people, right? So they don't need this conversation. But if you have assets, then you might want to listen to this conversation, because there are things you can do. There's some very effective tools out there. And as long as you are proactive and you do them now and don't wait until you have that liability, well, then they're also very effective.
Right. So, hey, but I'm an unsuspecting businessman building my business, living an upper middle class lifestyle. Yeah. And I don't realize that they're out there circling around me right now as we speak. What should I do?
Well, I mean, first you got to figure out what you have and just some basic knowledge. Figure out if you already have any asset protection, because some people do just by the fact that they live in Florida or Texas. They have a home that can be completely protected. If you have a lot of assets in an ERISA plan, those are also protected. So first step is to kind of take an inventory of all your assets and then figure out if some of it's already protected, because if it is, great. Now you have a starting point. And to the extent that it's not, that's when you start looking at, okay, what tools are available. So step one is have a conversation with someone like me that can actually give you that information, that can give you a summary of what it is that you have that's protected and what's not, and then what you can do about it if it's not.
All right. So, you got to like assess where you're at. Hey, I happen to live in Florida, and the only people that can get me are the state of Florida, the mortgage on my house, and the IRS. In theory, the IRS and the state of Florida. In reality, generally, they haven't been as up on things as they should, let's put it that way, from right. experience. So, but if you live in a state where anything is fair game, where you don't have, and you should say, why are Texas and Florida such good states to live in if people are out to get you?
So in the world of asset protection, there's kind of two categories. One are exempt assets, or what people call exemption planning. So exempt assets are assets that are already protected because they are exempt from claims of creditors under some code, usually the bankruptcy code. In Florida, it's actually the Constitution of Florida when it comes to the homestead. So one of the biggest exemptions is your home. And so what the government said when they put together these bankruptcy codes, it says, hey, even if you do declare bankruptcy, we don't want to leave you completely destitute. We're going to allow you to exempt from the bankruptcy claim a few assets. Your home is one of them. That's called a homestead exemption.
All right. So just tell us how that works.
Right. So in the exemption world, exemption planning is looking at the assets that are exempt under some statute. Typically, we're talking about a bankruptcy statute, and that could be either federal or that could be state. But one way or another, if you end up with more creditors than assets, you can declare bankruptcy, and then you're allowed to keep a few things. One of the things you're allowed to keep is the amount of your homestead exemption. So every state has some amount of your home that you're allowed to keep, but a few states have a really good one, which is unlimited. So you can have a $40 million home on South Beach in Florida and declare bankruptcy, and you get to keep your $40 million condo on South Beach, because Florida is one of the states that has an unlimited homestead exemption. I mean, unlimited, there's no limit, which is pretty awesome. So is Texas. And actually, several more states have started to move towards that, because it's a very attractive feature to encourage people to move to your state. If you can say, hey, buy a home here, it's totally protected from any creditor. I mean, any with quotes, right? There's always a few creditors that have some priority. And you mentioned the IRS is one of them. The state of Florida is one of them.
Real estate taxes, all that.
Right. Real estate taxes. You're not going to get out of that stuff. But normal creditors, just your Joe Blow creditor, you're going to be really hard pressed to reach somebody's home in Florida. So when I look at something, I look at all the things that are exempt first. So we look at the state that you're in, and we start looking at your assets. Another great exempt asset is ERISA qualified retirement plans. So that would be your 401ks, defined benefit and pension, all those things that are under the ERISA code, which is federal, which means they apply to all 50 states. Those are also completely protected. So if you got $1 million of equity in your home in Florida and $2 million in your retirement plan, you're protected. No need to do anything else if those are all your assets. However, if you've got $1 million of home equity in Florida, and you've got $2 million sitting in a brokerage account that is not in an ERISA plan, that is unprotected. So you'd have to do something about that piece of it if you want full asset protection. So in the world of asset protection, there's exemption planning. Obviously, we want to use that first. We want to, best practices to see how much we can get into the exempt assets. And then step two is actual asset protection, where we set up legal tools and structures specifically to protect assets.
All right. So in Florida, I mean, I know, and I've had them myself, a family limited partnership. Mm-hmm. Now we've switched over to family limited liability companies. But you have to realize, I guess, that laws in every state are different governing these vehicles, right? These
right, tools. Right. So now we go into the, you know, what are the domestic tools that provide asset protection? So limited liability companies, limited partnerships. In virtually every state, they have some form of asset protection. And what it is I call them COP entities, charging order protection entities, COP. So what a COP entity is it is an entity that if you own a membership interest in an LLC and you end up with a creditor, that creditor doesn't get to foreclose on your LLC to get the underlying asset. What they get is a charge against your interest. And that's what the charging order is. So the creditor gets a charge. It's kind of like a lien against your interest. And then if that interest ever pays out to you, then the creditor has the right to step in front of you and get that payment. So it's an effective tool because the creditor can't force their way into it. They have to sit and wait. And when they have to sit and wait, that's not as good as being able to just go in there and get the asset. And the theory behind it is that that gives you some leverage, because you can say, well, you're going to sit and wait forever. And how about let's make a deal? You know, let's settle something here so that I'm willing to give you some so that you go away so that I can get to my assets, and you're willing to take some so that you don't have to wait indefinitely. And it can be effective. I mean, it can be very effective to a degree. As with anything, though, if the creditor is big enough and the claim is strong enough and the assets are juicy enough, it may not be enough. And the problem with charging order protection entities is there is always this risk that a judge will say, okay, charging order is the normal remedy, but in this case, we think equity would be best served by breaking into the partnership, because the only members are family members and you guys were all part of this debacle that created this liability. And therefore, we're going to disregard that the charging order is the normal protection. We've also got states where the charging order is actually in the statute listed as the exclusive remedy. And then we have other states where it's not. And we basically give the judge discretion in those other states to say, hey, charging order is the normal remedy. We understand that, but I'm not bound by it. So to a degree, I definitely use those entities, and they are the base of a structure, but they don't necessarily protect everything all the time. And so we'll often use other tools on top of that, which gets into the topic of trusts.
Gotcha. Trust, asset protection, trust, and again, we have to emphasize that these things are only good if your creditors are not circling, if you're not circling the wagons already.
Right.
As a preventative measure. And certainly in most states, your family limited partnership or LLC is going to be more than adequate. But when you want to take a belt and suspenders type precaution, because you really have a lot of assets, then you have to go to trust. So why are trusts so effective? Doug, can you explain that to us, please?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base, with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, so trusts are really unique types of legal structures. They've been around since English common law. The concept of giving an asset to someone who's called a trustee for the benefit of somebody else is a very, very old concept. They're very respected in U.S. law. And for example, if you set up a trust for your grandkids and say, hey, don't give this to their, you know, spouses if they get divorced, don't give it to their creditors, don't let them gamble it away, don't let them assign it away, don't let them borrow against it, it's just for them, for these uses, that is as good as a form of asset protection as we really have in U.S. law. The difference between that type of trust and a trust called an asset protection trust is that you are both the creator of the trust and the beneficiary. Whereas if you're setting it up for your grandkids, you're the creator, which means you're called the settlor or the grantor, and you're setting up for a grandchild. So they would be the beneficiary. So in that, you know, you're the settlor and a grandchild is the beneficiary. Those are already asset protected. We don't really need to do any more. As long as you draft it properly and you have good spendthrift provisions in there and you put it with a trustee that's a reliable, you're good to go. But if you want to protect your own assets from your own creditors, setting up a trust and saying, hey, I want to put these assets in trust for myself and don't give them to even me if there's a creditor. Well, the problem in U.S. law with that is that that seemed a little self-serving. And so U.S. law never really respected that. Well, in 1984, a foreign jurisdiction called the Cook Islands said, well, okay, but why wouldn't we draft a statute that specifically allows for that. And so they did. They actually passed a statute that specifically allows for you to set up a trust for yourself. And that was the birth of what is now known today as foreign asset protection trusts. And now there's a couple of dozen jurisdictions that have a very, very similar statutes. And the benefit of the foreign asset protection trust is that the jurisdiction of the trust is that foreign jurisdiction, and the trustee is located in that foreign jurisdiction. And it is very, very difficult to reach an asset that is sitting in the custody of a trustee in a foreign jurisdiction with that statute on the books. That's the good news, right? The bad news is that those type of trusts are more expensive. There's a fair amount of compliance requirements with them. You know, you have to give control of your assets to some trustee sitting in a foreign jurisdiction. You need to move your assets physically, or at least be ready to move your assets physically offshore as well. So having your assets in a foreign trust, but still having them sitting in a U.S. custody bank account may not be enough, because the judge might just look at that and say, well, I'm just going to cut through that. I'm going to disregard that trust. So for a foreign trust to really work, you've got to have the assets ready to also be out of this country and away from that judge. So effectiveness, it's got it. But there's some challenges with actually using it, and it's fairly expensive. That brings us all the way to 1998. So finally, in 1998, a U.S. state said, hey, this is actually a pretty good idea. We're going to pass a statute that is trying to do the same thing. And that state was Alaska. And very quickly thereafter, some of the other well-known kind of asset protection corporate states like Wyoming and Nevada and Delaware passed similar statutes. And today, as we sit here and talk, there are 19 U.S. states with some type of domestic asset protection trust legislation on the books. And again, all an asset protection trust means is that you can settle the trust for yourself. So you're the settler, the creator, and you're the beneficiary. And so now in 19 states, you can do that. So that's good. It has changed the conceptual validity of an asset protection trust in the U.S., whereas before, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, U.S. law was pretty much, you can't do this and we don't respect it. Now we have to respect it to some degree, at least in those 19 states, right? So it's less expensive to do those types of trusts. There's less compliance requirements. The challenge with those trusts is they have not proven to be as strong. So if you look at the case law, there's quite a bit of case law around those trusts and many failures, because again, we're sitting in the U.S., right, Carrie? I mean, we're here. The judge is here. The judge doesn't like the structure and they're results oriented, and they just want to achieve a result. Well, you cannot absolutely rely on that type of trust to hold up. So that's kind of the world of asset protection trusts. What I've done when I started doing this 25 years ago, I looked at both of those models. So first of all, the domestic one wasn't even in existence yet. And so, you know, that came a few years later. But I looked at that and said, well, the foreign one is tough. A lot of clients are just not going to go for it. And the domestic one wasn't around. But even when it was around, that was a big question mark in my mind, how effective it was going to be. Now, I think that question has been answered. It's fairly weak, and I certainly don't love them, domestic asset protection trust. So I created something that's really a hybrid of the two. So I created a trust called the Bridge Trust. And what it is a foreign asset protection trust registered in a foreign jurisdiction, meeting all those foreign requirements, but then it's bridged back. And for the purposes of the IRS, there's a code section 7701A30E, which defines what will make a trust a U.S. trust in the eyes of the IRS. We meet the test under there to make the bridge trust considered a domestic trust for tax purposes. So what we've done is we've given ourselves and our clients the ability to have the foreign trust for protection purposes, but a domestic trust for compliance purposes. And so it's a much, much simpler trust to use and manage, less expensive to keep going, but ultimately just as effective as a foreign trust if we have to use it.
All right. And it's strictly US based at that point.
Yeah. I mean, and the trust is registered offshore, but meets the test and is considered a fully US trust from the eyes of the IRS.
All right. So it's got a taxpayer ID number and all that stuff. Right?
Well, it's a grantor trust. So this is another topic inside of the world of asset protection trusts. Most all of them are going to be grantor trusts. And what a grantor trust means is that it is disregarded for tax purposes. And the grantor, which is the person who created the trust, is treated as the taxpayer instead of the trust as a separate entity. And when you have a grantor trust, a domestic grantor trust, you actually use the taxpayer's social security number for the trust. It can also have its own tax ID number. You know, whether or not we get one is just a facts and circumstances decision.
Sure. Understood. All right. So how much can it cost to set one of these up?
Yeah. So, I mean, asset protection is, you know, somewhere between $25,000 and $35,000, for the most part. We're almost always going to combine that trust, that asset protection trust, with a family limited partnership type of COP entity, charging order protection entity. Usually that's done in a holding company style. So, you know, client has $2 million in their brokerage account. Okay, that goes into the holding company, the limited partnership. They've got a bunch of LLCs for rental property. Those LLCs would then in turn also go in the holding company. And then the asset protection trust, whether it's a foreign trust or a bridge trust or even a full domestic trust, whatever it is going to be the majority owner of that holding company. And then we can leave the client in the control position of the holding company. So client can still run the activities of the holding company.
But this only works if you have it set up before you run into problems, right?
Yeah. 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 If you call me and you've already got, like you said, the vultures are circling and, you know, they're already, you've got a judgment against you or you're days away from a judgment or you've already been sued and it looks bad. It's not the same game. We can't just, because then you run into a concept called fraudulent conveyance. What fraudulent conveyance means is if you convey an asset with an intent to delay, hinder, or defraud a creditor, that conveyance can be reversed. So the conveyance in this case occurs when you put the assets in the holding company and in the trust, because the trust owns the holding company. That's the conveyance. So we want to do that when the waters are calm. I do have clients call me and the waters are not calm. And we are still able to do it, but we have to almost always exempt the current claim. And so they'll understand that this is not going to be applicable to the current issue, but the current issue has gotten them to realize, I don't want to go through this again. And so we're putting it in place basically with an exemption for the current claim.
Got it. So, I guess it's again, like your mother said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. An ounce of prevention here is, you know, again, I mean, spending $30,000 to set something like this up and a few thousand dollars a year to maintain it. If your assets are, you know, $3, $4, $5, $10 million, it's an ounce. Whereas a pound of cure is when you're paying lawyers $50,000 a month to defend you in a lawsuit. That feels like a pound.
Yeah. Been
or more.
I got the t-shirt for sure.
Yeah, you got the t-shirt.
Hey, it's not a pleasant thing. No. Not a pleasant thing to be prey. Well, Doug, interesting topic here. I guess you can set these up virtually anywhere in the country for people. So if you want to find out more about you, connect with you on the web, how do we do that, Doug?
Yeah, you can go to my website. It's just my last name, Lodmell, LODMELL.com. Find out a lot of information. There's videos, there's papers, there's case histories, and lots of valuable stuff if you're just into the research part of it. If you want to have a conversation, I'm happy to do that and just kind of go over and do that analysis, help you understand what's protected and what's not. You can reach out to me directly. Phone number is 602-230-2014. Or just email me, doug@lodmell.com.
All right. Excellent. And there's a link to that in the show notes on Financial Survival Network. Make sure you go up and sign up for your free newsletter at the site. And if you got a question for Doug, just shoot me an email to kl@carrylutz.com. Doug, been a pleasure. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.